Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
What is up, everyone? We're back. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Cadalbio. It's Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com. We have a big PPV.com end of the year. So go to their socials, follow along, stream on PPV.com. No subscriptions. You can download and stream to your phone, to your tablet, to your big screen TV for your big time watch parties. We have some events that should be coming down the pipeline pretty soon. In terms of them being announced, 154 pounds. You know, Tank Davis is looking to get back into the rings. A lot of big fights coming up this fall because we're heading into fall because it is now late summer. We're in the Sunday portion of summer. I don't know how everyone stands there, but I'm ready for some big fights, and I'm ready to talk boxing with my friend, Chris Algieri. Hello. How are you, my friend?
Hey, buddy. Good to be back. It's been a while. I missed you.
It has.
We got a lot to discuss. I know people are waiting for our episodes, so it's a good thing. We know you guys are listening.
Yes.
It's good. It's good sound. That's a good thing.
We took last week off for a little Jet 2 holiday. I was out in the east end of Long Island hanging out. That was fun. Went in the ocean. That was invigorating. Got a little bit of a tan, which you could see. We'll be back, though. We'll be back starting September 1st. We're going to go back to two episodes per week as we get closer to Canelo Crawford. But for now, towards the end of the summer, we're going to have these one per week, and then we'll ramp stuff up because, you know, Canelo Crawford is right around the corner, less than a month away.
This year is just flying by. It's crazy that we're on the back end of August going on to September. It's crazy, crazy. Time flies, man. And this has been a good year, a very busy, busy, busy year for us, especially, but also just boxing in general.
So we had a big fight over the weekend. In the heavyweight division, Moses Atuma wipes out Dillian White inside of one round. This is where we're going to begin the episode. I may have placed the worst bet in the history of boxing.
That's a bold statement, dude.
I put on Twitter just the feeling. That was the caption, and it was my slip was Moses Atuma by decision for plus 550 odds. I had a bunch of people riding with me. It wasn't that crazy of a pick beforehand. I had a bunch of people saying, I will tail that bet, Dan. That's not that crazy. Those are great odds. Good bet, Dan. Nice work. Let's see. Atuma goes in there, blitzes Dillian White. Blitzes him. White had nothing. We went into that fight week saying he's in great shape, Dillian White. He is motivated. His only losses came at the highest of levels to Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, and Alexander Povetkin. Atuma, is he really that good? Dillian White should be able to show him some things. No, Chris. Moses Atuma showed that he is that damn good. With an asterisk, because Dillian White was that damn bad. But wow. What a performance from this 20-year-old.
Yeah, let's not just kick it under the rug about your bad bet, because you texted me right as the fight's starting, and you're like, I think this is gonna go to decision. And I go, it's not.
But you also told me in the last episode, or when some other time we were talking about this fight, you thought it could go rounds. Because I originally wanted to do 7-12. And then this fight changed from 12 rounds to 10 rounds, I don't know, during fight week, which was kind of shady. And I would have lost that bet too. But I had you in the back of my mind saying, like, this should go rounds. It did.
No. I did expect it to go rounds. I didn't think White was going to see the end. You know, he has been stopped a bunch of times, even though, you know, Atuma is kind of untested, you know, at the world-class level. This was his entry into the world-class, you know, fighting the guys that are there. And even though Dillian White isn't really world-class anymore, you know, he's obviously a little bit shop-worn. But incredible performance. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have a test and then you blow it out of the water. I mean, he looked sensational.
He was unreal, man. His punch, it was only, you barely get to see this guy. I mean, he's fought 13 fights. He doesn't. Not many of them gone past the second or third round, so we don't really get to see. We're getting glimpses of him, so we don't really see his like full arsenal. But the glimpses that we're getting are phenomenal. The way he can move inside of that ring, like first of all, his movement, it looks like he's bouncing on the balls of his feet, super quick in there. But his punch selection, Chris, like is perfect. Next level.
It's like AI. It's like AI. He's finding the holes perfectly. I mean, every punch landed on White, and everything hurt him too. And a lot of that comes from, you know, you mentioned, you know, his fluidity, but it's his balance. He's got really, really good balance, and the way that he moves the in and out, that pendulum step that he gets, and he gets set on those feet and lets those power punches fly. And that's why he generates so much power. I didn't realize he was that big. He's a real heavyweight. I thought he was a shorter guy, not shorter, but I thought next to Dillian White, he was going to be, you know, kind of looked a little smallish, but no, he actually looked bigger than White. I was surprised at that, but then, you know, he went out there and did what he did. I mean, that was even more surprising.
He's 6'4". He's listed as 6'4". Like, what would you say? He's like 230, 240?
Probably, yeah, in there. 235, 240, somewhere in that range.
So sub he's 250. Smaller than the Furies and Joshuas, those super heavyweights, but he's in the Usyk range. He's in the Usyk weight. He's around Usyk. I think Usyk 6'2". You know,
Joseph Parker used to be in there, but he's beefed up quite a bit.
He's beefed up, right? We'll get to him in a second on this episode too about what goes on at heavyweight. But I read your article on Boxing Scene. Those who haven't, go check it out. It's pretty good. Chris Algieri's school of thought about Moses Atuma, and you seem to be just blown away. Like, where do we stand on? Like, it's really hard because he got his name. Like, Dillian White is the biggest name on his list, but just how bad White looked in there, you can kind of pump the brakes a little bit in terms of this is not really his step up. Like, I agree what you wrote in there that Adelaide and Hergovic were way more of a threat to Atuma than Dillian White was, who fought on the undercard of this fight. But if we're just going off the eyeball test, like, it's all we can do right now with this Atuma kid. And it's like very exciting because I believe he's one of the best prospects in the heavyweight division, like, I think we've ever seen, or one of the top five, at least in terms of just like skill set.
Yeah. In a very long time. And I actually talked about that in the article too. Like, I haven't been this excited for a heavyweight in quite some time. And in the article, I put Jared Anderson, but another one that I thought about that was really surprised, or I was really excited about, was Ike Ibiabuchi back in the day when he fought David Tua and they had that slugfest. And I was like, yo, I'm like, this guy could be the future of the division. And then he, you know, self-imploded that whole thing and disappeared and got arrested and all these crazy things. But Moses, man, another thing I really like about him, he just seems like he has his head on straight. He's extremely humble. You saw how he handled that interview afterwards. Very, very humble, soft-spoken guy. And I look at someone like him, his 20 amateur fights. And to be that technically sound, that means that he lives this. That means that he is a good student. That means that he is putting in overtime at the gym. That shows tremendous discipline, which is the most important factor for any young fighter, is discipline. And he just strikes me as someone who has all of those parts. And you add that to the fact that he is a true heavyweight, that he is this next generation of athletic big guys. He's got everything on paper is there. The kid has got it, man. And he's extremely exciting. And it's extremely exciting for, you know, to have him in the weight class, or in boxing, because I mean, there's just, we all see it. Everything is there.
The discourse around Moses Atuma has been really interesting. Now with Twitter, everyone has an opinion. This is the bluest of blue chip prospects. He's the next great heavyweight. It's not just like a lightweight. It's not a guy at welterweight. It's always who's next at heavyweight. And I always remember Lou DiBella telling me there'll always be someone next. When Ali retired, someone came down the pipeline. Well, you know, go on and on and on in terms of eras. We're always worried about who's going to replace the last superstar. I'm not saying that could be Moses Atuma, but in terms of blue chip prospect level, I mean, this guy has everything. So everyone has an opinion on him, and we're all watching and reading these opinions on Twitter. And there's a lot of people that I respect in the industry, and it's really interesting to watch how we're handling it. It's like everyone has an opinion on how he should be handled and how he should be nurtured. He's like an A-list celebrity. Like, you can't put him in a bad movie because that might crater his career, but you know that he could potentially be a star. So we can't put him in a big – we can't rush him into a big fight because he might lose, and then we've lost our big ticket, and then maybe he really isn't that good. Or maybe we should rush him. Maybe we should put him in there with an Usyk so we can have a huge star. But it's really interesting to watch the entire boxing community come together and give their thoughts on how we handle this commodity, because this is a hot commodity. Frank Warren has what you look for, like the next heavyweight, can't miss. So now it's in his hands on how he goes about it. It's a lot of pressure, too, because, you know, the sport needs it. It's not just like baseball where, you know, you can focus on another game or that and the other. Like, boxing needs the next mixed heavyweight to come around. Like, there's a lot of pressure on Frank Warren, a lot of pressure on Moses Tsutsuma.
Yeah, I don't want to make this sound ridiculous or and over the top and be hyperbolic, but truly, I think this kid could save boxing. Not that boxing needs a savior right now, but you know, the old guard's leaving, and the stars of the sport are very few, and they're getting older. They're just not going to be around for much longer. But he has it. He has everything. He can be that guy. He can literally be the savior of boxing, where he is a superstar heavyweight champion of the world in a couple of years. But to your point, and I think even to Frank Warren's point, listen, these guys have been around for a long time. He's very, very smart. He knows how to build guys like this. He's not going to rush him too much, too fast. He's not going to throw him into a fight with Usyk. I don't think their team is really interested in that kind of fight. You can say that. You can see from what they were saying afterwards, they might just be throwing their name out there for clickbait, whatever. Which obviously has got everyone talking about it. But I think they're going to be really smart. And I'm not saying you got to handle him with kid gloves because he's too damn good. You don't have to do that. But I do think they're going to move him in a stepwise function, moving forward, moving up, getting him into that position. Because like you said, man, he's a commodity, and the amount of money that he can generate in a little bit. This is not smash and grab. We don't need to smash and grab with a guy this good. We got to build him the proper way. And also that comes with marketing as well, building his brand, because that's the level of guy that he is. Like, an Anthony Joshua is a brand. Like, he was built into that position. And it still stands his brand. You know, it's taken some hits, obviously. So is his chin. But, you know, Moses Tsutsuma, I see very much in a similar fashion, that they can build him the right way over time, not right away.
The thing, it's a great discussion in terms of his marketability, because obviously he has all the tools. So I think Gareth Davies was interviewing Eddie Hearn, and you have to take this with a grain of salt, because Eddie Hearn does not have a piece of Moses Tsutsuma, and probably some bitterness there. He also has built up Anthony Joshua from, you know, the start of his professional career to where Joshua is today. So Gareth Davies says, do you see any similarities between Moses Tsutsuma and Anthony Joshua in terms of star power? And Eddie kind of diplomatically said, no, you know, they're different people. Like, AJ can light up a room, which we saw. AJ won the Olympic gold medal in London. And then, most importantly, Eddie didn't say this, but I will add it in myself. Anthony Joshua built up his early portion of his career fighting on Sky Sports, which is like the equivalent of HBO here in the States. This Moses Tsutsuma fight was on DAZN pay-per-view. I couldn't believe that. This is a guy with 13 pro fights on pay-per-view. That's just the state of where boxing is these days, is that this guy should be fighting 5-6 times a year on cable or whatever the equivalent is. I know that doesn't even exist anymore. So it is hard to make those comparisons between Tsutsuma and Joshua, but in terms of skill set, which should be the most important thing, because Joshua, I feel like Joshua's star power and his skills, they only like were even, or they only like came together very briefly in his career.
Very briefly.
Because then it was star power, skills went down, or skills were up and he wasn't as big as he probably was. So it's very rare that a fighter where their star power and their skill level is at the same point. That's when you have a Oscar De La Hoya. That's when you have a Mike Tyson. That's when you have these like once in a generation type
bona fide superstars. Yeah.
Right. So Tsutsuma could be that, but I just wish he had a little more visibility, and that could come too, and that could fall into what Warren wants to do, is, you know, let's not put him in there with Usyk, let's not put him in there with any of these bigger names, let's get him in front of someone that can withhold a punch and let's build this guy up. Let's get him in front of your
and maybe we can get some rounds. Maybe we can get some rounds, like I said.
Get some rounds. Yeah, like I want to see what this guy's made of. I want to see like him. I just want to see more of him. He's like the hottest thing in boxing right now, and we're getting it kind of makes his lore even like raise even higher.
He hasn't lost a round yet. He hasn't lost a round yet. Like we haven't seen him struggle at all. And you never, there's always question marks about a guy until you see them struggle. At least you see some kind of pushback. He's had zero resistance going forward. And yes, good. It's by his own doing because he's that good. But you got to test your guys on the way up. You got to push their limits a little bit. I'm not saying too much, but you got to get pushed because you don't know what you don't know. And we don't know much about him yet. And I don't think he really knows that much about himself at this point. When you're deep in a fight and you're in trouble and your nose is bleeding and your eye is swelling or a guy hurt you or your hand is hurt. There's so many things that happen, countless different things that can happen and variables that happen during a fight that you have to deal with. They have to deal with it on the fly. So there's a way to do this. And we all know how that works. And especially for someone who has so little experience in terms of the amateurs before, you know, hey, 20 amateur fights, you got 13 pro fights. Now we're talking a guy who's 33 total fights. Like that's crazy. So why rush him? Doesn't make sense.
Talking about rushing, Turki Alashik has stated numerous times, most recently, Turki Alashik has stated that he wants Alexander Usyk versus Moses Atuma, and he wants it soon. That would be his wish. And as we know, Turki, when Turki wants something, he usually gets it. He's the money man. He's the mover and shaker in boxing right now. It's the big question in boxing as of August 18th when we record this episode. Is Moses Atuma ready for Alexander Usyk?
No. No. No, it's not. And it doesn't make sense for someone like all the things we've been talking about in terms of how you build a blue chip prospect and how you get him to the marketability of that. You're just going to throw him right into with Usyk. Usyk has been fighting top level guys for the past decade and beating them and demoralizing them and smashing them. Like especially now. Now he's smashing guys. Like they know Dubois knockout was out of this world. Like, I mean, talk about a demoralizing defeat. Do you want to potentially do that to Moses Atuma, who could be the future of this sport? I don't know. And are the fans really that into that fight either?
It's not big enough yet.
No, that's what I mean. It's not big enough yet. So I don't know. But listen, this could be a great ploy to get Moses Atuma's name attached to the guy who's in the top of the sport. Listen, we're talking about it right now. That's what I think Frank Warren is doing. I think he's being really smart about it. Now, whether or not Turki actually really wants this fight, I'm not sure. This could all just be a ploy, but I don't know. I don't care to see that fight anytime soon.
Conventional wisdom would say that's insane. Don't do that. This is a guy who's 20 years old. He has 33 professional or total fights. Build this guy up. But we're living in a different world now. We're living in a world where there's one person making decisions who has a lot of money and wants to make these big splashes. We're also living in a world where the heavyweight division has been completely cleared out. Alexander Usyk is circling the block and beating these guys again because he's running out of dance partners, getting bored. So you have this phenom and you have this generational great in Usyk. So I get it. I get why it's being discussed. And I'm seeing people out there saying that Atuma would give Usyk problems. I don't see that just yet because I thought Usyk looked maybe the best he's ever looked against Dubois. And mm-hmm. I rate Dubois pretty well. And I'm just haven't seen a fall off in Usyk yet. But I get why we're doing this. And also, if Usyk wasn't, what is he, 38 now? That plays a role.
Yes.
Like,
for sure.
Say Usyk was like 34 and he was still as dominant as he was now. And he still has the same resume and the same wins. But Usyk's like 4 years younger. There's not as much of a rush that we need to see this fight. Usyk has how many fights left? Three or four tops?
If that many. I
like the idea of a passing of the torch. It's something that's happened in boxing forever. As long as the sport's been around, we've had that type of fight. So I understand it. To me, like storyline wise, this is great. This is awesome. It makes fans understand. It has all the marketing. But the thing with Usyk is how many more fights does he have left in him? In a perfect world, Atuma would probably 2 or 3 years worth of fights, maybe get like three or four in. And then face Usyk in 2 years. In 2 years, Usyk's 40. 2 years, Usyk might not be in the sport anymore. So that's a very delicate balance that we're dealing with right now, is the age of Usyk and wanting this fight, because I do want to see it, but not just yet. So what's the compromise here? Is it a year from now when Usyk's 39 and Tuma has like a couple more scalps?
Usyk is in the driver's seat and he could stop fighting at any time. Does he have three more fights left? Maybe. You know, but listen, I'm telling you, at that age, anything can go at any time. He can have a fight scheduled, and training camp's not going good, an injury happened, anything, God forbid. But like that could be the end. That could be the last time we see him. You know, that's common. Andre Ward, I remember he forgot which fight he had lined up, but HBO and a big deal, and he said I talked to him about it, and he just said he came home from the gym, he sat in his car for like an hour or so, and then he called up everyone. He's just like, I'm done. I'm out. Like, he had a huge deal waiting, and he was just like, I'm out. That happens, you know, and he has every right to do that. We all do. We can stop. We don't have to fight. And especially a guy like Usyk, who's, you know, I mean, he's made how many hundreds of millions in these last couple years?
So much money.
But I don't think he doesn't do it for the money. You can tell he doesn't do it for the money. But I think even if he's in camp, it doesn't feel good. I could see him just being like, all right, I'm good. Good career. I'll see you guys.
Does he want to
be that guy who's gonna, you know, take on the young lions and you know, have it, that's how he exit the sport? I don't know if he wants to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because that's the main thing here, is that Usyk is getting up there in age. I mean, every Usyk fight, the last like four or five fights, I've thought the same thing as you, like, and the same thing as a lot of people out there. Is this the fight where he gets old overnight? Are those legs gonna give out? Is he doesn't look menacing, and he's going up there against a Dubois, he's going up against a Fury and a Joshua, like, he should lose, because he just doesn't, it's just the eye test or something about it with Usyk. Like, he's always too small, or
he looks vulnerable. He looks vulnerable. Right. Like, it's just there. He's small for the weight class. He's fighting these monsters, and they're killer punchers, and, you know, he's not like a, he's not a wow guy. Like, he just gets it done. And, you know, he squeaked by some fights. The first Tyson Fury fight, you know, he hurt him, but it was a close fight. Second fight was pretty close too. The Anthony Joshua fights were very close too. You know, and you mentioned how you feel like he's getting better. Like, this is the best version of him. And I have to agree, because he's getting stronger. He's knocking guys out now. He was not a knockout puncher a couple years ago, but apparently is now. Yeah, I don't know. He's in the driver's seat.
Is there anything you see with Tuma that could give Usyk issues?
Yeah,
youth,
absolutely.
Power,
youth.
Movement.
Yeah, youth, power, speed, everything. I mean, it's a lot of the things that, and it's a lot of the things that, you know, Anthony Joshua at his best had, and he had success against Usyk as well. So it's definitely there. But you know, so a lot of that youthful exuberance and talent and physicality, Dubois had as well, and we saw how that went. For me, though, the thing about Usyk is your mind, because it's a mind battle with him. Does a 20-year-old have it up there to be ready for a fight with a man like Usyk, who stares through your soul and makes you check yourself every round? I don't know, man. We saw Dubois crumble in that second fight. He crumbled the first fight, and then he put up even less of a fight the second fight. And he's mentally so difficult to deal with, which is another reason I don't like Moses Atuma fighting him, because are you gonna break this kid mentally early? You know, like, even if, you know, I don't know. I think that Usyk is a very special character, and I think Atuma has the ability to be a very special character in this game. But I don't know. But like you said, these things happen lately, so it's not out of the question.
Well, yeah. Nothing. There's a lot of factors in this, a lot of variables. And Dubois showed that his mentals wasn't there. I mean, partying before the fight, I couldn't believe those videos and pictures I saw at that. So you could just see that Dubois might have had the skills in the ring, but there's that other part. Those other intangibles were not there.
Yep.
Atuma, I feel like with Dillian White, tried to play mind games with Atuma, you know, delayed his ring walk during the week. He was playing mind games because Dillian White has been there, done that, seen that. He might have been outgunned, but he was going to try to play mind games, and it didn't faze Atuma whatsoever. So we're getting in there with Usyk. You know, that's all. That's the he. Not only is he the best heavyweight in the world, but like you said, Chris, he's the best mental.
He's a chess player. He's a chess player.
He's also the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
he makes these guys think, and he doesn't even. Seems like he's not even trying half the time, and he can do it. But another thing, flip side of this, I'm trying to look at all the reasons because anything could happen in this sport. We've learned that over the last couple of years. Any fight can be made, big, small, crazy, exhibitions, circus fights, all that. In terms of like, if Atuma, they say they make Usyk Atuma next year and Atuma loses but doesn't get embarrassed, like, is that the worst thing in the world? Like, we still get this mega fight. We still get the opportunity to see if Atuma can do the unthinkable and beat Usyk. We have the opportunity to watch Usyk beat another guy. Is that the worst thing in the world? If Atuma steps into the ring and loses to Usyk, can he still rebuild after that?
It's not the worst thing in the world, but we like our heavyweight champions to be undefeated. Simple as that. We like our heavyweight champions to be undefeated. You know, when Tyson Fury was reigning for a long time, he was undefeated. You know, then obviously Usyk toppled him. Mike Tyson was undefeated all those years coming up. But no, it's not the worst thing. I think in the era that we're in now, it's really not the worst thing. And listen, if that fight is to happen in the next year or so, and it makes will make more sense then, because I'm assuming they're going to keep Itelma busy. Mm-hmm. So his profile will grow. And Usyk is not getting younger. So that gap starts to fill in. Will it fill in enough time that Atuma can actually have a chance to win? That's the question, right? I don't know. I feel like you can do so much with Atuma fighting the Dillian Whites, who's the Franklin
Jermaine Franklin.
Jermaine Franklin's of the world, the Philip Hergovich's of the world. Those are good fights. Like, I want to see those fights.
Let's talk about that. Let's get into like the realistic, because we're seeing a lot of unrealistic and we're seeing some hyperbole. It's like, fine, we're excited, right? We're excited about this guy and the sky's the limit. But realistically, I'm going to throw some names out here and you tell me if you like these fights or not for Atuma. Philip Hergovich.
I like it. I would even say that's a little too soon. Like, I would like to see a fight in between. Yeah, I think Hergovich is still a dangerous guy. He can punch, and he showed that on Saturday. He's been in some wars too. Like, we see he was a war with Zhang. He was in a war with Dubois. He was just in a war over the weekend. Like, he's battle tested.
Battle tested. He's a really great chin because Adelaide landed some bombs on him, and it had me thinking like, I want to see Atuma land those bombs. You know, I think Hergovich.
Zhang is a killer puncher too, and he went 12 with him.
This is why I like the idea of Atuma fighting Hergovich. I don't know if it has to be next, but I know Hergovich's team's probably angling for it because he's like kind of on the outside looking in. He's not a title contender. He's like the second class. I would say he's just outside the top 10. People know him. He has a profile. He has a great chin. He's durable. I would like to see that sometime soon. Hergovich versus Atuma. Martin Bacoli.
I would put that in the same vein as Hergovich. Good fight. I don't want it next. Listen, Bacoli ruined Jared Anderson. Jared Anderson was supposed to be the next heavyweight phenom, right? And then Bacoli got in there and destroyed him. So I know Jared's never going to be the same. So do we want to
know where Bacoli's head mind is at? You know, he's large. He's out of shape.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a shame he's talented.
So far, I know.
He's talented. It's a shame.
The shine is worn off of him. Jermaine Franklin was named by Atuma in the locker room after the fight. He literally, like, out of all the names, he just popped out of Batuma's mouth, Jermaine Franklin. And he literally said, it's not the most exciting. It might be a little boring, which I thought was, like, kind of disrespectful to Franklin, but also named him. And if Franklin's like, it's that meme of, like, when you're on the couch, like, me? Like, Franklin's probably like,
who, me? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do that. Now, you know, that's going to be an outstanding payday because they're going to overpay. Franklin's durable. I like that one.
Let's be honest. That's what's going to happen next, guys. If that team brings out that name, then yeah, that's of course. Like you said, like, why would Franklin not take that fight? I think it's a logical next step. Franklin, very good chin. So are we going to get rounds? Or is he going to blow this guy out too? Also, Franklin's not a puncher. So there's less of a risk. He's got fast hands. He throws combinations. He's got a great gas tank. He's very, very durable. So I think that's the most logical next step. I don't think he's as dangerous as Hrgović. I don't think he's as dangerous as Pakoli. But we're going to get to see something from El Talma that I don't think we've seen yet, fighting a guy who's, you know, just below world-class level. I think that's the most logical next step. And it just makes too much sense. And the fact that they brought it up out of nowhere, you're like, oh, okay. Well, then that's – I'm sure that's the game plan. Frank Warren's very smart. He knows how to do this.
Yeah. And is Zhuhai Zhang F.A. Ajagba?
I have no problem with Ajagba next. Zhile Zhang, I don't have a problem with that either. Because who did he just got smashed by?
Zhang?
Yeah.
He lost.
Caballel, right? It was Caballel. Yeah. I'm okay with that based on that Caballel fight because he showed that, you know, these young guys are he's just lost a step. So
right. I understand that people are calling for Caballel Atuma. So I have like two rungs here. Like the guys that I just named are guys that have once that have gotten to the highest level and lost or been at that level are names. Hrgović, Pakoli, Franklin, Zhang, Ajagba have all fought big names and they have losses and they are now represent a name that can be durable and could be another scalp for Atuma. That's a whole class. The Usyk, Parker, Caballel, I'll throw Joshua in this, and Fury. Those aren't fights that Atuma should not go near. Those are fights that his team should just steer clear of because it's too much too soon. It's not there yet in terms of marketable fight just yet. There's not much to gain for Joshua to take on a passing of the torch fight. Not much to gain for Fury. Obviously, he doesn't even have a title. And then we just talked about Usyk and Parker and Caballel. Caballel makes zero sense. If I'm Caballel, like, I would say, yes, I'm flattered that you guys want to fight me, but I'm this close from a legit title shot, and I've worked my way up by beating some of these names, so he's out of the discussion. Same thing with Parker. Usyk should be fighting Parker.
Yes, absolutely. The most deserving fight out there is Parker, no question.
Usyk versus Parker, and in the meantime, let Atuma fight the guys we listed before. Let Caballel could wait in the wings. You know, it's not like he's a super big demand for him to get his just due. He's not.
I like Caballel. I like Caballel. Everyone I think he's does. Really good. Yeah.
I think he would give Atuma fits. I just don't like the fight. Doesn't make sense, though. Like, why would Caballel take that fight?
I got a few million reasons why.
Yes, money, yeah, of course. Besides that,
there's money flying around. But I think Caballel's another guy. He's on a nice little run right now. He destroyed Makhmudev. He beat Frank Sanchez. He stopped Zhang. That's a good group of names. And those are the kinds of names that I would like to see a Talman be fighting. And you're building your war chest. And you're building your record. You're putting names that are recognizable, and you're getting rounds, and you're being tested at certain degrees. So I think all of the names that you mentioned for Atalma, I think Caballel's in kind of the same boat. You can be fighting those fights too. Oh, you also fight Chisora. Chisora is always a tough out, man. He's another one.
Chisora might.
If you fight, listen. If you fought Dillian White, Chisora's . I'm okay with Chisora. I think that's a good test. He's another one.
What about?
He's durable. He does get stopped, and he's physical.
There's a name that no one's really putting in this list, and that is Daniel Dubois. Like, it's very hard to think what's next for him because he has such a strange career. Like in terms of being up and down, champion, contender, knocked out, back, and now he's in this. He's changed trainers. Like, I don't see Dubois stepping in there with Atuma, but that would be something.
Yeah, it'd be a huge risk for Team Dubois. I think he's already in the room. Dubois is a world champion. Dubois has beaten some of the big names of recent past. He's in a different room than these other guys, than Caballel and Atuma. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to step out of that room to give the shot, especially when you're still licking your wounds from the Usyk fight.
Right. And then there's like guys like Fabio Wardley, who is older than Atuma. Older than Atuma, but is still in the same part of his career in terms of on the come up, like kind of next up, like him and Justice Hooney, those types of guys. I just think it doesn't make any sense. I don't think those fights make sense because it doesn't make financially, marketability wise, like they should meet, but not now. They should meet when they both either have titles or they're both vying for titles. I think that whole rung of fighters that are not the same age, but the same type of experience level as Atuma, they shouldn't fight yet.
Promoters love heavyweights because heavyweights bring in money. So when you have a heavyweight prospect, you don't match him with another heavyweight prospect because you're knocking one guy off. Like, why you're not getting to the big payday. You got to get the bag. You got to get there. So matching them up early, you're going to have both promoters being like, "Eh, that's not a good fight. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense." So
therefore, from this, after this little experiment we just did, Atuma's going to keep on fighting the guys that have, in my opinion, a name and are durable. Hrgović, mm-hmm. Bacoli, Franklin, Zhang, Ajagba types. He's not fighting anyone the same experience level or the same level of hope, and he's not getting the big names yet. So Turkey can say he wants the Usyk fight, but realistically, I just don't see it just yet. It's fun that it's there. Like, that would be super exciting. A year from now, Usyk is still winning, still undefeated, and Atuma has 4 or 5 more wins. Maybe one of them is Bacoli, Hrgović, Zhang. And then we have ourselves an event, and hopefully it's at like Wembley or something, and we're very excited for it.
I would like to see Atuma beat one of those guys, like a Dubois or a Parker, before he would get that shot. You know, to get closer to getting in that room. You know, like Joseph Parker, man, you get by Parker, you deserve a shot, because Parker deserves a shot, and it is so deserving of a shot. And he's a very difficult guy to deal with, and he's very tough. And he's in a new phase of his career where he's looking really, really good. Best he's ever looked. I don't like the idea of being able to jump in front of a guy like Joseph Parker, who he's just like the nice guy who just gets kicked to the curb, you know, time and time again.
I think Usyk filed for some type of an extension citing some minor injuries in terms of negotiations to begin for the Parker fight. Usyk says, "I've kind of have built up enough good credit and I deserve to take some time," which I agree with. Don't know. These sanctioning bodies pick and choose who gets more time and who doesn't. But you would think Usyk would get a little time. I would like to see Parker Usyk. The finances may not align, where, you know, I don't think that Turkey's interested in it. So therefore, it goes to like old school. Like, can we have a gate? And is there a network interested? And does it make sense financially? Like traditional business sense. So we'll see there. But Atuma is really good. I'm excited. And it kind of just leads to like this old notion that there will always be someone next in boxing. You know, after De La Hoya, there was Mayweather. After Mayweather, there's the era that we're in now. And who's going to be next at heavyweight? We had some great heavyweights in this era, and some great heavyweights in the 90s, 80s. And now we're all excited for this guy. And there's a lot of pressure on him, but it seems like he's got the goods. So it's pretty damn fun. And it usually comes out of nowhere, too. Like, I would say the last year, this guy came out of nowhere.
Well, the fact that he has 20 amateur fights is mind-blowing.
Really? He's 20 years old.
Yeah, talk about coming out of nowhere. It's truly out of nowhere. But usually, there's rare that a future heavyweight champion sneaks up on you. And you got this guy. Like, Anthony Joshua was an Olympian. Like, you know, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, these guys are all long come-ups, and we knew they were on the radar coming up for a long time before you started even these discussions. So this is interesting to have a guy really sneak up on you like this.
Also on this card, we watched Nick Ball. He squeaked past Sam Goodman. Really fun fight. They were only separated by, I would say, I have the punches here, 20 punch difference in total connects. Wow. Goodman proved to be pesky and would have probably been a good opponent for Naoya Inoue if they would have got that on. And for Nick Ball, it's another close win. Didn't look great. Kind of fights down to his opponent's level. Brawls a little too much, but says, "This is who I am. I'm going to brawl." But it's his third title defense. I wouldn't say he's the guy at featherweight, but You know, he's got a title. He's fan-friendly. He remains the only UK title holder. It was a fun fight. I thought it was – this whole card was pretty good. I just wish more people would have saw it. But Nick Paul, still a champ at 126, but I think a lot of the other contenders are, like, chomping at the bit to fight him.
Yeah, Nick Paul's always fun. I mean, the guy's a, he's a wrecking ball. He's I mean, 5'2". He throws bombs. He gets hit. Very, very good fight. I really enjoyed the Raymond Ford fight. But, yeah, I feel like he has a ceiling, and it's very visible. And, you know, not knocking him at all. I really like him, but I think he's probably at his peak in terms of, you know, for this weight class, and any weight class is going up. It's a tough division. You know, you got guys like Angelo Leo, you know, you got Espinoza, you know, Rafa Espinoza, he's a beast. Carrington, Bruce Shushu Carrington's coming up. You know, I don't know where Ball goes, but I do know where Ball goes. Inoue gets past Akhmadaliyev, MJ, which is not an easy fight. I think he's a logical first fight for 126. I think enough holes.
Not so fast, Chris, because I think Inoue Nakatani is actually going to happen at 122.
Oh.
Nakatani keeping Ball's belts and is moving up.
Wow. I didn't know that. Dan, you're breaking news to me right now. That's interesting.
Well, a lot of things are happening.
Again, Inoue has to get past MJ. It's not a fight. It's not a good fight. It's not an easy fight. It's a really tough fight. No. I think people are just looking at the monster as being unbeatable, but he's not. He's human. And we're seeing it more and more, especially in these higher weight classes.
Yeah, Nick Ball was like he had the golden ticket to potentially fight Inoue if Inoue was going to jump right to 126. But I feel like Inoue has kind of pumped the brakes on that move to featherweight. He's fighting MJ Akhmadaliyev in September. There are strong movements and rumors for an all Japanese fight between Inoue and Nakatani in Tokyo.
God, I love that.
Next spring,
we got to go to that. Damn.
That's epic. It doesn't gotta get go. Any better than that. It's a top 10, two top 10 guys. Yeah, we got to go to that. But Ball is a champ. You got Carrington, who's chomping at it. Carrington Ball, like, I feel like that could be made. You know, Carrington is, you know, top rank, is out there farming out their fighters. Carrington has the association with Turkey and all them. That could be fun. Leo's a champ. If he wants to unify, Leo versus Nick Ball would be at war. Espinoza, I'd love to see him fight anybody. So I thought Nick Ball was good. Like, I also, another thing too, I got to keep in mind is the Saudi fights. I think we've seen enough, like, sample size to kind of grade some of these performances on a curve because of fighting in Saudi. Would you agree or disagree?
You think because of the atmosphere?
Yes.
That atmosphere, we're not getting the best out of the guys.
Yeah.
We're not.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thought, and there's a lot of variables when it comes to travel and bringing your teams in there and not having an audience. You know, watching fights in the bubble was weird. I worked a lot of bubble fights, and the lack of atmosphere really affected certain guys. It affected guys both positive and negatively. Some guys actually, you know, they felt less like it was a fight and more like a sparring session, so they could relax and then perform better. So, you know, these are the lower level guys. But then other guys, like the big guys, you know, just kind of felt like it was a sparring session and kind of treated it that way. But I'm gonna say about Nick Ball and Sam Goodman, I think Sam Goodman's really good. I'm not knocking Ball for struggling with a Sam Goodman. He still won handily. I think that's a good performance, a good win. I think Sam Goodman is actually a very good fighter. I give my props to him. And I thought him and Inoue was going to be good. I thought he was going to be pesky enough to give Inoue some issues. So I know people are coming down on Ball. He was even coming down on himself about the performance. But I think that's just what Nick Ball is, man. He these are the kind of fights that he's in.
Yeah, I don't want to use that as an excuse because, you know, Otumo fought in Saudi and looked amazing. But I just think some cases, like sending Ray Ford, who fought on his card, beat Abraham Nova, late replacement Nova. And, you know, Ford didn't look that great. And I've seen him in the past look a little bit better. But he also had a good performance when he fought Nick Ball. That was in Saudi. So it's just a theory that's out there. I think that the further we get away from, like, the bubble, I think needs to be looked at as an asterisk. The Saudi cards almost resemble a bubble. There was not a lot of fans in the arena for that Saturday's card. It was very quiet in there. Ray Ford got the win. Another close fight. Weren't separated by too many connects, according to CompuBox. Nova fought better than expected. Like to see Ray Ford potentially fight Oshaki Foster, Stephen Fulton winner. Maybe they can reschedule.
He called out everybody. Anthony
Ford did?
Yeah, everybody.
Oh, he's hungry. He's 27 and he's good, and not a lot of people know about him. But I wouldn't say it was outstanding performances from Ball and Ford, the two A-side favorites, but they still got wins. Doesn't matter. And they move on. But I like Ray Ford, and I think he should circle the Foster Fulton winner. I don't know where that fight's happening, because that was supposed to be on the Tank Roach undercard, which is complete disarray. But that's what Ford should go after. Or you can, you know, reschedule with Kachache.
You can never say this guy's name. Kachache, bro. Even come on, it out. You're Italian.
Kachache. Reschedule that.
You spelled it out phonetically?
Kachache. Yeah, I did. I wrote it out like that.
That's a good fight.
Reschedule that fight.
That's a good fight. I like that fight. I think that's a logical fight. I think it's an entertaining fight. I like Kachache with everybody. I don't think he's the standout guy in the division, but I think he'll give everybody a good scrap.
Yeah, and Ford is there. He's there for the taking. I still think he's good, but he looked a little vulnerable on Saturday. Good card. Wish more people saw it, but it is what it is. End the show. We're talking about 154-pound weight class, which seems to have exploded over the weekend. Fights announced.
Yes.
Negotiations leaked. What were you saying?
I said, yes, I'm 54. Very exciting weight class.
And there's a slew of updates and fights. So apparently over the weekend, Sebastian Fundora, Keith Thurman, reported by Mike Coppinger for October 25th, Fundora will be defending his title against Keith Thurman. This was always the plan for PBC. We know how they move. When they have a fighter that they want to put into a fight, they will go through with it.
They don't let it go.
They don't. They have a plan and they stick with it. I watched Fundora Zoo with Thurman up at the announce table at the last fight, and he was scouting Fundora. It was really cool to watch. Say what you want about that fight. Does Thurman deserve it? I don't know. Will he give Fundora issues? He could, because he's a wily vet. But that's looking like October 25th. October 18th, Virgil Ortiz, who was rumored to be fighting Keith Thurman. That fight clearly fizzled out. Thurman probably asked for too much money. Virgil Ortiz is fighting Erickson Lubin on October 18th. I like that fight. It's not a bad fight.
I do, but what happened to... What's his name? General Blank on
Bakram,
round champion. Yeah. Bakram, who was supposed to fight this poor guy. Like, he's a champion. He just gets sidestepped. Like, this is crazy. Like,
B-side champion
who gets kicked to the curb and paid side money, step aside money over and over and over again. This guy, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. He was rumored to fight Lubin, and I think I don't blame Lubin for. Virgil Ortiz is a bigger fight. I think Virgil
probably more money, but it's not a title. It's not a title fight.
Not a title fight. Virgil Ortiz, I think, is the best at 154. Doesn't have a title.
I agree.
On top of it, Virgil Ortiz says that there's an offer out still to Xander Zayas for a 50-50 split, the Zone pay-per-view, Zayas versus Virgil Ortiz, which would be Zayas's first defense of his 154 WBO title. It'd be Ortiz's first title shot at 154. Mexico, Puerto Rico, they have a network. They said they're willing to do it in a neutral site, California, Vegas, in the States, which is kind of cool because we're not getting much stateside fights. But Zayas's reply was a little funky here, Chris. He said, that's not a real offer. So apparently 50-50 is not a real offer. And come fight me in Puerto Rico. So doesn't want to do it in a neutral site. Wants to do it in his backyard. Doesn't like the 50-50 split, which is crazy because Zayas does have a belt. But, you know, Ortiz, I feel like, is the mover and shaker here. So that happened over the weekend. And I'm reading leaked emails. And Golden Boy can't believe it. And just a lot. I'm reading that at the beach saying, ugh, what are we doing here?
I like how you put that in. I'm reading that at the beach, you know, just working on vacation, just, you know, putting my feet up, put my feet in the sand.
Reading
big rich guy. Emails. Rich guy. No. You can't help yourself. You can't stay away.
It was nice to get away and not look at it, but I did, you know, I kept an eye on it, but it's just nonsense. It's all nonsense. 154. The whole, like, these fights, like, come on. Zayas is saying, come fight me in Puerto Rico. Like, that to me, that's a no. Yeah. But, like, when he said, come to Puerto Rico, that's a bold face. I don't want to fight you. It's a way out.
I don't dislike that fight, by the way.
It's an awesome fight. It's the logical next fight. Like, Fundora should be fighting Ortiz, or should be fighting Zayas. Zayas should be fighting Ortiz. Zayas should be fighting Fundora. They're kind of just circling each other, and then eventually we'll fight. So we get, in the meantime, we get Ortiz versus Lubin. Fine fight. In the meantime, we get Fundora Thurman. Fine fight. This is not the fights that we want. Boots versus Lima. Not the fight we want.
Not
I just
fight,
saw no. Boachuk is fighting Brandon Adams.
That's a good. I like that fight. That's a good fight. It's a rematch. Brandon Adams knocked out Boachuk. People who don't know that, what a killer left hook.
That's on the Canelo Crawford fight week. I've heard that the Canelo Crawford fight week is going to be three nights.
That's awesome.
It's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I love that.
Like Cosmopolitan one night on the zone. One of them might be like a ring, like their rings first, like on their whatever network. Mm-hmm. But that's another fight where Boachuk, I thought it could have been in the running to fight Boots, and I don't know this for sure, but according to Boots' side of things, he said he was injured and he couldn't fight Boots, which would kind of like give Boots a little bit of like, hey, we jumped all over you for fighting this Lima guy. Like Boachuk would have been a great opponent for Boots at 154.
That's a tough guy to welcome you into the weight class. Boachuk's rough, man. He's a very tough, strong, durable guy.
98% knockout rate.
Yeah. Very, very, very dangerous guy.
So, like, I don't know. This is the thing with these negotiations. We never know the truth. And the people that jumps on sides are fans. I get that. And they have their favorite fighter. And they're going to believe whatever is spewed out there. Like, we jumped all over Boots for not fighting a Boachuk, not fighting anyone Ramos in the top 10. Turns out Boots sent his team sent a offer to Abel Ramos, not Jesus Ramos.
Yeah, that was funny.
And it came right from the source. It came from Jesus Ramos. He goes, you guys sent it. I don't know if you did this on purpose. You sent it to my uncle instead of me. I don't know if that was a mix-up. And it had all these stipulations in it. And my uncle did accept it or was down the fight, but not under the stipulations that they had. They must have had it way tilted to the side of Boots in terms of money and everything. And Ramos would have been jumping up from 147. But like, the press for Boots hasn't been good. But if Boachuk said I'm injured and then turns around and fights Adams.
Yeah, that's not a good look either.
The damage is done on Boots.
It doesn't matter. The damage is done on Boots, and he's been catching a lot of flack lately for the way that he and his team have been moving. No question about it. But you saw what De La Hoya said. He's like, these guys don't fight each other. You know, it's we got these champions, and they're not making these fights. I think he was referring to Xander and Virgil. But it's true. It's accurate. We got weight classes where we got three undefeated champions. How the hell does that work? Like, how are you guys all circling each other and playing tag? And not getting in the ring. Don't you want to make money? Fight each other.
But they want to do it at their pace.
I guess.
They want to make
it nice. It must be nice. Yeah. I wish I had that grace when I was fighting.
Right? Like Fundora has been moved very carefully and has been placed on major cards and is now a champion, not coming into his own. And now he's fighting Keith Thurman, gets his own pay-per-view. It seems like that's going to be the case. October 25th, PBC on Amazon, streaming on PBV.com. Ortiz, Lubin, like, we just went over this. Like, these aren't exactly the matchups that the fans are calling for. They're still into it. Like, I've seen fans, Fundora, Thurman, they were still excited about it because Thurman's a name, and Thurman can give Fundora issues. So I would not be, like, that shocked. It would be a big upset. But would you be extremely shocked if Thurman pulls off beating Fundora?
Not at all. I can never unsee that Mendoza knockout from Fundora. Mm-hmm. Keith can still punch. You know, he showed that in that return fight. He's crafty. He's very, very smart. You said he was scouting him, and he's got a great eye for the sport. He's been around forever. I mean, big amateur background, got a ton of pro experience. You know, obviously he stayed in shape over the years, and the power is the last thing to go. But if he's tricky enough to get through and find a hole, which there's many holes in the defense of Fundora, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
And if you're watching closely, the Fundora Zoo rematch, Fundora was getting cracked.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
big time.
Like clean, hard. You name it, left hooks, right hooks. Zoo just didn't have the firepower to do what Brian Mendoza did. But yeah, he still gets hit super clean. So,
and I will say this about Keith is that I think 35-year-old Keith has more savvy, more left in the tank, more of a chance than 30-year-old Zoo.
Well, Zoo might as well have been 52 when he was in there. Yeah. I mean, he had a lot of miles added on real quick. You know, from those 18 months worth of, you know, hard luck. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, so we may not get all the fights we want at 154. It's just like kind of like cursed, or not cursed, but it's like best division, most names, but that's going to make more complications. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
some of these divisions that only have two contenders, that's logical that they fight each other. I mean, but now there's too many options. There's too many names. There's too many networks, and there's too many promoters all getting their hooks into these guys. And if it sets up unifications down the line, then so be it. But even like a Virgil Ortiz, we just said best in the division, and he doesn't have a title, and he's not fighting for a title. He's fighting Erickson Lubin,
in discussions with any of the champions. Like no one's mentioning Virgil Ortiz's name.
Well, he's trying with Zayas. I mean, that was
no one's mentioning him. Is my point,
right? Yeah, the email went out, and Eric Gomez of Golden Boys. This is the first time I've ever seen a leaked email. I think Zayas leaked it, which in turn didn't make him look good. Like, I don't know what Zayas thought he was accomplishing by leaking that, a 50-50 offer, neutral ground, pay-per-view points.
You know, well, I think he was saying that wasn't true. Right?
I can't even try to make sense of what they're even trying to get at here. Like, what's not true? That was a fake email?
I don't know. Or that's not the details of the deal? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's like a hook and, you know, that it wasn't 50-50. It was 60-40.
Right. They pulled that's what I took from that. I don't know if that's, okay, you know, right or not, but
what I took from it was Zaya said wasn't happy with 50-50. Thought maybe he deserves more because he's the champion. And on top of it, come fight in my backyard because I'm the champ.
Yeah, it's
even
a lot.
Though I'm 22 and I'm not in the ring top 10. I mean, that's not the end all be all. Weird sport, man.
I've been saying this for a long time. This is the greatest sport on the planet, and it is the absolute worst business on the planet. It's horrible. I mean, the hoops that we have to deal with and watch. I mean, while it seems like everything's burning down at the same time, it's a mad world, man. It's a mad world.
That's why we spent the big portion of this episode talking about how to handle a phenom at heavyweight, because it is unlike any other sport. You're not putting him through a 16-game NFL schedule, or how many ever games they play now. I think they play 18 now. And no, you are picking your opponent. You're crafting a career because it's a business. So we're seeing that at every level. The highest of levels, which is Atuma, and the amount of money that he could potentially bring in. And then big fights at 154, but they're not like massive money makers. Just keeping the sport.
They're just really good fights. They're just really, really, really good fights.
Speaking of really good fights, I'm heading out to Orlando on Thursday for Most Valuable Promotions is doing a double header Friday and Saturday. I'm calling 19 fights this weekend.
Wow. Getting your reps in. That's good. That's good. You're going to be hella sharp.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm actually really looking forward. I haven't called a fight in a while. I love calling fights. One of my favorite things. Jean-Paul Rivera fights in the main event.
He's good. I like him.
He's very, very good. And then we have Yanko Rodriguez, who is fighting.
Also very good.
Yeah, he's fighting in the fight night portion on Saturday night. And that's a vacant 112-pound title. And a slew of other really, really cool fights with some really good prospect. Corey Marksman's fighting.
I like that kid.
Really
he's
good.
Been looking good. Looking really
Yuenis
good.
Yuenis Telez is fighting. Excellent. Stephanie Hahn. who's a champion at 135. They're trying to match her up at Holly Holm. Littered with great fire. Jamal Harvey, who just signed an MVP out of the Olympics. It's really fun. It's on the zone. Friday and Saturday night. Catch me on the call. I believe it's part of the subscription. No additional costs there. So
I'll be tuning in. I'll be tuning in.
Nice, bro. Gotta get two suits.
Ah. Well, I mean,
can't wear the same suit twice.
Cannot wear the same suit twice. You can't even wear back-to-back weekends, let alone two nights in a row.
I wear them like once. The suit I wore for the tank fight was probably the biggest event I ever worked. I might as well put that in like ice. I might as well hang it up on the wall because I'm never going to wear it again.
Yeah. Packing two suits sucks too, by the way. That's not fun.
I have that like bag. Maybe they'll sponsor us. That's called the – I forgot the name of it. That's not a good sign. I forgot the name of it. And you put the
– There goes suit. That sponsorship, Dan. There goes the sponsorship.
You put the suit in the bag, and then it zips up and it turns into a bag. Got the name of
it. Yes, I've seen that thing.
Shackle put me onto it.
That's a Shackle thing for sure. That's definitely a Shackle move.
Because that kid's impeccably dressed at all times.
All the time. And his hair never changes. Does he have a barber live in his house? The kid is always.
You know, it's funny. He does Yankees here in New York, and I watch a lot of Yankee games. And he'll be like the sideline reporter, and Paul O'Neill, Yankee great, will just needle him about his hair throughout the broadcast about how perfect
That's awesome.
It is.
Yeah,
like Michael K.
Yep.
Like, look at Justin. Has your hair even moved this game? It was like windy out or something. And yeah, he's got great hair.
Shackle looks like he's dipped in wax. Like he's just like totally, you know,
takes care of himself.
Perfect. Everything's perfect. Yeah.
He's a specimen and does listen to this episode. So hello, Justin.
I know. Hey, Justin. He's also a absolutely tremendous broadcaster. He's amazing.
All right, everyone. That is our episode. We'll be back next week. So starting September 1st, back to two episodes a week. Thank you for following along. A little bit of a slower time in boxing, but it doesn't mean we're going to stop with the content. We've got a shit ton coming your way. Anything else, Chris, or everybody out there?
No. We have a big announcement coming from my end pretty soon. We'll talk about that on the top of a show. We're not gonna end the show about the announcement. It's a big one.
Chris has been up to. It's really exciting, everyone. Yeah. Very cool. I'll let Chris wait to announce it. Very cool project that Chris is a part of. We will talk about that soon. All right, everyone. Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.